This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. Our emphasis is on innovative thinking and practices that have solid data and results. What if the fitness gurus are giving us terribly bad advice? Advice that results in poor posture, back pain, losing muscle, and even putting on weight when we're exercising to try to lose weight. Physical therapists Doug Splitgerber and Deborah Corbo say that is exactly what's happening. Overcoming their own health challenges, they develop a system of exercises that vastly improves posture and fully stretches muscles. They say that a lot of knee surgeries, arthritis, carpal tunnel syndrome, and other painful conditions can often be prevented with proper exercise. Get ready for some very surprising challenges on what you think you know about fitness. Doug and Deborah, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You both come from a long tradition of people who have overcome their own health problems by developing movement and fitness systems. We have Franz Alexander with voice problems and Moshe Feldenkrais with knee problems, and Pilates had a whole host of problems, asthma, rickets, rheumatic fever. I could go on and on. I just mentioned Jenny Maddox, who's been on our program a couple of times, overcame polio. Doug, in your case, you had spondylolisthesis, which means that over half of one of your vertebrae was off center, and they told you to get a spinal fusion, and you went on to become a competitive weightlifter for 20 years, lifting more than 700 pounds. How did that happen?
Well, the prognosis that they gave me at 18 was that the fracture that I had on one of my facets would basically turn into the full fracture of both sides, and then the forward slippage would require a fusion of my spine. And I just felt that there had to be something else that I could do, and that's where I started basically learning about anatomy and kinesiology, and from there used weight training, properly performed, very cautiously, mind you, and began to strengthen my body to the point that after about 15 years, 18 years, I was competing as a competitive powerlifter and doing, as you said, squatting 700 pounds and so on, all with no back pain. I'm now 20 years older than that. I'll be 59 this coming year. I still have no back pain, no arthritis. I still squat well over 500 pounds and deadlift over 500 pounds. My spine is still fractured, too, with no fusion.
That's amazing. Deborah, you were a distance runner that suddenly developed a disc problem. What was your story?
I was 12 years old, and I was in gym class when gym class was a really gym class, and we were climbing ropes, and I sort of let go at the top and fell to the bottom, and lo and behold, I ended up with three herniated discs and a lot of pain and problems, and they basically said I needed surgery, and I told my mother no. She brought me home, and I said, get me books. I need to understand what in the world a disc is. And from the age of 12, I learned what to do. I didn't want surgery, and I wanted to be out of pain. And I ended up going to university, learning and exercising and strengthening also, so I was able to perform any activity I wanted to without pain. And I'm still learning today. And I'm 50 years old, and I'm squatting over 300 pounds and deadlifting over 300 pounds at the age of 50.
Amazing. And that's part of anti-aging, is being a lifelong learner. And both of you went on to become physical therapists.
Yes, I went to the University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I'm a professional trainer. I didn't have a chance to do a physical therapy, but I've been a professional trainer for about 28 years. I was also a faculty member with the National Academy of Sports Medicine in Chicago. My responsibilities were teaching anatomy and biomechanics to new trainers. So I've got 6 years as a faculty person with them, so the anatomy and biomechanics that I learned was put to good use. But I'm unfortunately not a physical therapist, but I'm a trainer of a different sort. That's why I call myself a trainer to the trainers.
One of the things that fascinated me was you said that the conventional wisdom is that we need to work our heart more and get more cardiac exercise. And you say our heart is the most used, usually the most fit muscle in our body. I think people would have a difficult time believing that.
Well, when you stop and look at the whole cardiovascular system, your heart, first off, is cardiac muscle. It's not skeletal muscle, and that's where people really don't understand the difference. Cardiac muscle is made to work 24/7. 365 days a year. It gets its strength from its function. So that is the best part of the whole system. But when the body that the heart is in is not breathing properly due to improper spine position, has muscles that are not maintained properly, so there's not much carbon dioxide and oxygen exchange on a cellular level, and then the venous and arterial systems are plugged with cholesterol and plaque and so on, the best part of the whole system is the heart. And when a person finally succumbs to a heart attack, it's not because the heart is weak, it's because it's overworked.
So an unhealthy body is going to greatly tax the heart, but should we still be periodically challenging our heart to its limit to strengthen and stretch the muscle?
Well, the problem with that is, like you said, should we be challenging the heart? The challenge for the heart is to stay beating in this dysfunctional system. So for people to go out and attempt to do something that challenges their heart without addressing the rest of the components of the cardiovascular system is basically an accident waiting to happen. And this is, unfortunately, what people attempt to do. The recommendations that they're given by the medical community and everything that they need to address aerobics is completely taken out of context and basically causes a lot of the problems that people have, such as osteoporosis.
So should the average person be doing cardiovascular exercise?
I think they would be better off improving the position of their spine, their breathing mechanism, learning how to breathe properly with proper thoracic spine position, and then also addressing the tissues of the body, which all of these things together will give the heart a much easier time. But if you stop and think about the whole cardiovascular system, it's like we said, the heart is the best component of the whole part. So cardiovascular training really only needs to be done 2 or 3 times a week, and that is if you're deficient. But if you have plugged arteries and veins and deficient breathing and you try to do something, you're basically creating a situation that your cardiovascular system cannot address. In other words, you're putting your heart in jeopardy by doing this, but at the same token, you're telling your body to lose muscle, because muscle is not a component of the cardiovascular training. So you're doing a double-edged whammy to your body that's really a disservice.
So you get the foundation right before you do serious cardiovascular.
Yeah, and you don't need to do the serious cardiovascular. If you stop and think about it, Dr. Bricky, that the heart is made to work all the time. Can any of us run up a flight of stairs or run across the street or, you know, any of these things that are just these short bursts of cardiovascular demand? Absolutely, we all can do that. But to go out and run, let's say, 5 miles, that is something that is a condition that is not part and parcel to the human function. Now, if you look at strength in comparison, strength is a natural part of the body. Your body holds on to strength much more so than it does onto this artificial cardiovascular training. Ask any runner, and the worst thing that they could possibly do is to take off 2 weeks from running. Why do they do that? Because their body deconditions automatically and severely, because this is not part of our physical makeup. So that tells you that this whole idea of doing this cardiovascular stuff for these artificial means, if you have a real need for doing this, like you're going to go and run a 5K race, which for the life of me, I can't understand why anybody would want to do that, but if that's what you want to do, then you better train for it. You know, or you play NBA basketball or something like mm-hmm. that. But for the most part, if you don't have a need for that, there's no purpose for that. You'd be much better served by addressing the muscles of your body, doing resistance training, which presents a huge cardiovascular demand on your body, but it's more functional than just going out and pounding the pavement.
You mentioned osteoporosis coming from cardiovascular exercise.
Deal with this all the time in physical therapy. The problem is when you do a cardiovascular activities, you're telling your body, we don't need muscle. It uses the muscle to feed the body to do the cardiovascular exercise. Now we don't have, now our muscle, which is declining anyway, especially in women, because we start out with 30% less muscle than men, and now we're telling our body to utilize this muscle to feed our body. Now, if we don't have the pull of the muscle on the bone anymore, we're going to end up with osteoporosis, and that's what's happening.
So our bodies are extremely efficient, and they try not to have any more muscle than we actually use, and consequently we need to use all of our muscles periodically to capacity.
That's right, but in this day and age, the way everything is, we're a sit-down society. We don't have the physical output that we had, you know, 30 years ago, so we have no demand, and that's where resistance training properly performed, and we preface that enormously, that it has to be performed properly, because improperly performed, it's one of the worst things you could do. Properly performed, it is the absolute best activity that anybody could do. And it's, I mean, this is the thing, the resistance training that tells your body explicitly to kick in its adaptive powers and to retain that lean body mass, which is the biggest biologically active component in the human body. It's the destination for our food. So if we want to maintain our body weight and give our place to go and not have to sit there and look at deprivation basically as a means of controlling our weight, muscle is the key component for it, but it has to be used. And it needs to be progressive, too.
So you're saying, among other things, that the key to weight loss is resistance training, not cardiovascular.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because all the cardiovascular training is a calorie burn, but the detrimental effects, the abuse on the body from the repetitive motion, and this is one of the biggest downsides, is it's a very, let's say you're cycling, so the pedal, you know, the pedaling the bike, just an ongoing tightening. Everything that we do as human beings creates a tightening condition on the body, but it's the repetitive motions. Whether you're sitting on a bike or walking on a treadmill, you're locked into this repetitive motion, and the detrimental effects are enormous with that. So all that is a calorie burn, but people that have done this, where do they go from here as your body adapts? And this adaptation is the preeminent function of the human body, is adaptation, both good and bad. And this goes on every second of the day, but as the body adapts, the person has to do a greater and greater aerobic level or greater aerobic demand to continue progressing, because the body's constantly adapting to it. Where do you go? Do you spend an hour and a half, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours? Now you've got the cumulative abuse. Now you stop this, you take this calorie burn away, the person blows up like a balloon because they've cannibalized the muscle on their frame to do this enormous amount of activity. Now they can't do it because now they're hurting. Their knees hurt, their back hurts, their feet hurt. And you take the calorie burn away, now they've got major weight problems. And this is the scenario that everybody goes through. And as you get older, it's even worse.
You don't like treadmills, not only because of what you've been talking about, but also what you call the push-off?
Right. When we do walk, we need to use our glutes and our hamstrings, and we can't do that. When you're walking and the ground is not moving, but you are, now you have to utilize your muscle to do that. You need to use your glutes and your hamstrings. Now, when you get on the treadmill is just turning and turning, so the floor is actually moving. You're standing there, and you're just trying to keep up with this thing that keeps moving. There is no push-off. There is no strength component. You do not use your hips. And that's our big qualm is people by the age of 20 stop using their hips.
I often use a little mini trampoline. I jog in place while I watch television. Is that a problem also?
Well, there's so many components with that. If you're not into your hip joint, you're rebounding, you know, you're rebounding. And that, you know, if your joints are positioned correctly and your spine is positioned correctly and you're actually getting weight bearing, there may be some calorie burning in there, but, you know, the trampoline's doing most of the work. You know, you can literally stand there with your knees, you know, straight and bounce up and down, and, you know, how many calories are we really exerting? To do focused resistance training, and I think this is the real reason why people don't do this, is they don't understand. They think it takes a lot of time, and they just don't understand the mechanics, so they don't do it. And that's why the recommendations of go and perform something that you like to do or something that's fun comes into play. But unfortunately, all these things fall into the category of usage. The adaptive powers of the human body are so enormous that if you do the same activity literally 3 or 4 times in a row, your body's already adapted to it. So how do you make it harder? How do you make it more demanding? And if you don't, and this is where most people fall into this category, if you don't make it more demanding, it falls under the category of usage. And usage requires no adaptation whatsoever. There's a constant improvement in efficiency of the body, and you basically continue aging and going downhill. That's where the progression is the key component to this, where you can actually place a greater and greater demand that is commensurate with your body's adaptive powers that it's already done.
Gee, it sounds like work. They just keep increasing the work, but not the pay. Just to make sure I understand, so for the average person, are you saying not to do any cardio as people normally think of cardiovascular?
That isn't the deficient part. That's the problem is that people look at that and say, okay, I need to do this. What they need to do is look at the tissues themselves, look at the muscles that have not been used, because it's the draw of the muscles that demand the oxygen, that create the exchange on a capillary level for the oxygen and the carbon dioxide to be exchanged. That blood flow is what keeps the arteries and the veins clear. It's just, you know, it's just like a pipe that fills up with sediment. If you slow down the flow of water through a pipe, sediment builds up at a tremendous rate. If the flow of water through that pipe is at a proper rate, there's no sedimentation. And that's what people need to understand. But it's the tissues, which is the end of the line of the pipeline, so to speak, that is unreceptive. There's no function going on there, so what do we need oxygen for? What do we need nutrients for? Because nothing works. So people would be better off spending time readdressing this, because for most people, this hasn't been used in 20, 30 years. For most, a lot of people, it's their high school years have been the zenith of their physical activity. And then I get to our age where they're, you know, baby boomers and beyond and are retiring and are trying to lead an active life after 30 years of sedentary living. And that just doesn't make sense. That would be like me trying to, you know, have a retirement, and I never put a nickel away for retirement, and then expecting to go traveling around the world every day of my life when I'm retired. Well, everybody would think I'm absolutely crazy to think that, but that's exactly how people think they're going to live their life in retirement.
I think a lot of people are going to be happy to hear that they don't need to be on the treadmill, because for most of us, that is as boring as you can get. But when somebody comes to you with six-pack abs and great biceps, you shudder and say, what in the heck are you doing? Why don't you like those beautiful muscles?
Well, it's not that we don't like people that have that, are very few and far between. Most of them are young people, so they just haven't gotten to the part that they've put on body fat. So that's why you see all the young people in the commercials and everything. You don't see anybody that's our age, you know, that are doing this stuff, because you can't walk around with a 6 or 7% body fat level. That's not functional. The average 18-year-old male is 15%. So for somebody to strive to keep their body fat levels between 15 and, say, 18% for their entire life is an enormous task. To do that is just, I mean, that's like being Mr. Olympia. You know, and for a woman, an average woman is 24%. Debbie strives to keep her body fat in the 17-18 range and still complains that she's not lean enough, but that's enormous for a woman to do. But people look at body fat levels as a natural part of aging, and it's really not. It's a natural part of dysfunction. The food's got no place to go. So the people that have the beautiful muscles and the six-pack abs and everything, I was a competitive bodybuilder for 20 years, so I was in that realm of that, and that's the sport, is competitive bodybuilding. So I've competed on that, but that's not normal people. So I don't like to use that as any type of a goal for people, because that's not realistic. Most of those people stop training and just end up becoming like everybody else. You know, it's a very short-lived, very abusive sport. So that's not something that we look at. We look at strength in that your workout, your resistance workout, should be the zenith or the height of your physical activity. That should be the hardest thing that your body encounters at any time. And then your life should be lived inside those parameters. Playing golf and playing tennis and the things that you want to do, you know, as you retire, should fall well within the guide, right, well within the parameters of your weight workout, which should be the most demanding, because that is the most controlled.
When you said that very lean body fat for somebody in their 50s or 60s isn't functional, do you mean it's not healthy?
They can keep their body fat levels down, but most people do that by starving, and what they end up doing is basically starving themselves of muscle. And so they end up what we call skinny fat. So their body weight may be, you know, say 165 pounds, just for an example. And, I weighed 165 pounds in high school, and I still weigh 165 pounds. But I'll guarantee you, if you're not doing something to address the muscles, your body fat level has probably gone from 12 to 14% that you were in high school to probably 30% now. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they gained a lot of fat. They just don't have any muscle. And that's what they call, that's sarcopenia. That is aging. That is the aging body with the loss of muscle, and it does not have to be. And that's what Debbie and I are out to prove, is just how long the body can retain muscle, and I've seen no end in sight. I mean, Debbie and I are both getting stronger as we go. We have adaptive powers, but the thing is you have to continue to stimulate your body, and that's not what we're telling people to do. But we're telling them that we're showing them what the body can do when properly stimulated, and most people never even begin to tap into that.
Now, back at those six-pack abs and the big biceps, one of the other things you write about is that a lot of people have just developed a few areas and their leg muscles are weak and their whole system is terribly out of balance.
That's true, and because that's why men are notoriously known for skinny legs. But loss of hip function, most people go through, but when they're in their 20s, and that's the precursor for everybody's bad back. But when you see these people with this lopsided development, that's all they use. So if they're going to the gym and they're working their back they end up working their biceps. They end up trying to work their chest. They work their biceps. They end up trying to work their legs. They work their biceps. You see what I mean? So all you're seeing is a display of the accumulation of work and the adaptation of the body for that. The body does not display different genetic tendencies within the same organism. And that's a huge misunderstanding that's in the world of conditioning and everything is, oh, well, you know, I've got genetically good biceps, yet my legs look like Paul Puny. You know, that's absolutely baloney. And that's what people need to understand is that the bottom line for people like that is you don't have a clue how to train your legs properly. And that's the bottom line with that. And I've been in this in the health and fitness industry for 40 years. I'm telling you, that's what it is. Just like, you know, I wasn't supposed to squat. I mean, we just finished working out a short time ago, and we both did double body weight deadlifts, both with back problems, and both in excess of 50 years old. I have no back pain. I have no back discomfort. I don't feel any fatigue whatsoever in my body. We did this a half an hour ago.
So much of the fitness industry, it's like that Fernando where he says it's more, you look marvelous, and it's more important to look marvelous than to be marvelous. One of the myths that you challenge is in gymnastics and often in yoga or even martial arts, this idea of you want to get the flexibility just as far as you possibly can and even beyond what people think is possible.
Right. There's a component. Our body has limitations. And the problem that we see with all these, because we have all these kind of clients that come in that have all these pains. We have people that have gone to India to teach yoga. These are top-notch people that teach yoga, and they come in because they have back pain, neck pain, because they're going beyond their limits. You have to, in order to perform a lot of these activities, they're leaving go of their spine in order to get, you know, to do a back bend or to do down dog. And we look at these positions, and they're going beyond what they should.
What kind of injury is that causing?
A lot of low back injuries. We get and neck injuries. That's a lot what they cause. We have people that come in that are aerobic people that teach aerobics, and they have a lot of calf pain and plantar fasciitis of the foot because they're on their toes all the time. It's like, no, you're going beyond limits here for flexibility and a continuum of when they're doing aerobics, they're on their toes all the time. It's like you can't stay there. That's not where we were meant to be.
And when you say back pain, is this usually disc problems?
They end up with disc problems, yes. That's exactly, I mean, I said, look, I understand disc problems. I live with it every single day of my life since I've been 12 years old, and you need to understand the limitations.
And one of the things that you write about is that most sports aren't healthy, which is something that I've believed for a long time. Could you tell us a little about why you say they're not healthy?
Sports in and of themselves are usage. And because of that, people do not get strong from participating in sports. Sports are very abusive, football, tennis, everything. All of these things are highly abusive activities because they're repetitive in nature. Let's say tennis, for instance. You get a lopsided development of the body on one side that you're playing with, all the tightening that happens. I mean, you look at a professional tennis player, their forearms are two different sizes. Their body is contorted and twisted and rotated, and these are all privy to their sport. Now, what we say is that each sport has a maintenance requirement that is huge, and that's what you need to do. The sport in and of itself is not that detrimental, but the lack of proper maintenance is, and that's what people need to understand, that you don't stay fit by playing tennis, that you need to do conditioning and stretching and proper strengthening in order for you to play tennis and withstand the rigors of the sport.
So maybe 10% of your time should be to actually doing the sport, kind of the icing on the cake, and the rest of the time should be staying in shape.
Yeah, but the general conditioning, the resistance training that we need, so we need resistance training, we need flexibility work within the confines of proper ranges of motion because that's the protection of the body. And now the application of that conditioned body to the activity of tennis or golf or football or whatever, that's the icing on the cake. That's why you do conditioning that you do. I mean, it's like Debbie and I, we primarily do weight training because of the total control that we have over all aspects. I can go out and play tennis if I want to, and I can play a pretty good game. I'm about a 3-6 player, and I can go out and play golf and do a decent round. But I don't do that because that's not what I want to do. I want the control. I don't have a lot of time to spend, and that's another huge misnomer with people is that they feel that this conditioning takes a lot of time, 3 hours, and that goes back to the aerobic thing that we talked about earlier. that, you know, this boring activity and I got to spend an hour to do this. I don't have that kind of time to waste. So I got to be real specific, and that's why the resistance training is a much better avenue.
I'm curious, when you're lifting 700 pounds, isn't that abusive to your body? Why do you personally choose to do that?
Well, it's not abusive in that it's totally controlled. The lowering of the weight is done. I'm not letting go. I'm not dropping, you know, in comparison to, say, doing a yoga class where I bend down and put my head between my legs, where I let go of my spine and stretch all the ligaments out as much as I can to put my body in a contorted shape that is totally abusive. That, to me, is much more detrimental than me challenging my body, because it's the muscles that are doing the weight. You know, because I have that much weight on my back, that is a conditioned response, or that's a conditioned ability from years and years of doing this. It's not something that you're just going to go in to do. I mean, we've had high school kids, for instance, that came in. I had a young high school kid that was squatting 575 pounds, blew out his knee. The kid weighed 167 pounds, 170 pounds, and he did it in front of his football coach. And he couldn't understand why he blew out his knee with 575-pound squat. This is the idiocy that goes on out there, but what we do is so controlled, and that's what people don't understand. Doctors, I tell a doctor what I do. In fact, we have our own personal physician as a client, and he watches us squat and just shakes his head. He said he's never seen anything like that. But we are totally under control.
Let me get to two other myths. One is that light weights, you know, those 5-pound dumbbells are helpful. And you say it's a waste of time and maybe even harmful.
That's true. Again, going back to the adaptive power of the human body, and that's what the body does. You take light dumbbell, for somebody that's never worked out, a lightweight is fine to start with. And you need to work up, but you have to be cognizant of the fact that your body is going to adapt, and what was initially hard is going to become easier. Your body works on what's known as an all-or-nothing principle. It'll only involve as much muscle fibers to do what you're asking it to do. A 3-pound dumbbell requires X amount of fibers. A 15-pound dumbbell requires X plus a whole bunch more fibers. So that's what you're dealing with. So to take a lightweight and do a bunch of repetitions, all you're doing is using what you've already got. You haven't told your body anything. Again, it falls into that category of usage, which is why nobody gets anywhere. And they look at weight training and say, well, you know, I did weight training. No, that wasn't weight training. That was like going out and playing cards. That's the thing, is each workout is another challenge to your body's adaptive state. It's not about going in and doing an aerobic workout or taking weights and flinging them around while you're doing a step class and everything that people like to do. That is nothing. That's just like going out and playing a round of golf. Now, if that had any bearing on fitness, everybody that's a golfer would look like Arnold Schwarzenegger used to look, and that's not true. It's all it is usage. It's just like going shopping and pushing a shopping cart around, or walking down the streets. See, and all of these things fall into the usage category, requires no adaptation by the body.
So it's intelligent challenging all the way.
Yes, and that's what keeps you young. Because these adaptive powers, Dr. Bricky, are the things that are functioning in us until the day we die. And the fact that we don't use them, they become stagnant. People are asking for energy all the time. Energy comes from the muscles creating ATP in the mitochondria. Muscles that have been stagnant and unfunctional for 30 years, they don't do that anymore. They're just stagnant. It's like a deserted factory that can't produce any energy anymore. And that's what people need to do, is to start getting these things going. Now, that's the key thing, is to start at the right level. Mm-hmm. And that's what people don't do. They just jump into the activity. No conditioning, no nothing. Tired now. Now I'm going to go out. I played golf once every 3 weeks when I was working. Now that I'm retired, I'm going to play 5 days a week. You're an accident waiting to happen.
One more myth. A lot of women are afraid of heavy weights because it'll make them muscular, and you say absolutely not.
I wish it did. I'd be very happy. Women have more fat. We have more fat than men do. We start with that way, and it's because of childbearing. It just doesn't happen. We do not have what it takes to gain huge muscles. Now, what happens is women see when they start lifting, the first 6 to 8 weeks, there's a lot of adaptation, and you see something actually happen because it's something you haven't done. It's a stimulus. But what happens is we have this layer of fat, and then we have some muscle starting to grow, you know, starting to get a little bigger. And then what happens is they say, oh, I'm getting fatter, and it's not that, or that my muscle's getting so big, but it's that layer of fat. You have to continue doing this so that the more muscle we have, then now the fat can be utilized as food. So the more muscle we have, the less fat we have, and that's always my thing. We're always looking at body composition, and the biggest thing with me is I want to make sure that I have not decreased my muscle mass. And I know if my muscle mass is there, my body fat level is going to stay at a really good level. And so I want to maintain my muscle mass, and I know that my fat will stay in position.
So the very muscular women we see in some of the weightlifting competition are probably taking testosterone or steroids?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's again, the media and what people see with this is a whole sport unto itself. And it has absolutely nothing to do with reality, no more than the men's sport with all of the six-pack abs and the big biceps and all that. It has nothing to do with general conditioning and the rest of the population. You know, it's a complete sport all by itself, and it would be a wonderful thing if we all had that to worry about, that, geez, I'm going to start working out, and boy, just like that, I woke up the other day, and here I was, Arnold Schwarzenegger, just laying there, just amazing. You know, if it was that easy, and I can tell you, after 40 years of training, I've had to work my insides out every second that I work out to get and to maintain where I am. And Debbie, the same thing. Debbie's maintaining 121 pounds of lean body mass that she has to fight tooth and nail for every day to keep. And that's the reality of it, not this, you know, stuff that people see on the media. It's not something that, I mean, weight training for women, the best thing they could possibly do.
For everything. I mean, I have the bones of an 18-year-old. The doctor couldn't believe it when he did a DEXA. He said, you could stop doing whatever you're doing and from the age of 50, and he said, and probably live to 105 and still not have osteoporosis. He says, I've never seen this before. It can be done. It can be done. It's starting at any age.
Marvelous. We've been talking about the problems. In a couple of minutes, we'll get to the solutions, but I want to take a break. We're talking with trainer Doug Splitgerber and physical therapist Deborah Corbo, the authors of Your Body, Your Responsibility. This is a book that gives a whole new take on posture, muscles, and fitness. And it comes with a DVD that walks you through the exercises they recommend. It's only $36.95, which is a real good price for having both the DVD and the book. And you also have a radio program. By the way, the website is yourbodyyourresponsibility.com. That's yourbodyyourresponsibility.com. And the radio program, well, you can get to it from yourbodyradio.com. And what I like about that is from there you can get the free MP3 that shows you how to do that squat exercise that you're talking about, how to do squats the right way. You want to tell us about the radio program and how to access that?
Well, we've got two different networks that we're on. It's one is on Wednesday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's on Healthy Life, or on Tuesday afternoons, excuse me, on HealthyLife.net at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on KFNX. And you can get that one at 1100KFNX.com. And the other one is HealthyLife.net. And both of these, you can they have archives, and you can just click on. You can listen to them live or with the archives, too. But it's a program that we do, and we hit every subject that you can imagine, from aging to osteoporosis to dieting problems to shoulder problems, back problems, how to live in your body better. It's just a ton of information and things that people can use.
We'll get back to Doug and Deborah in just a minute, but first I'd like to talk to you about coaching. Success at life calls for being very clear about who you are, what you want, and how you'll achieve it. Historically, psychologists have focused on fixing what's wrong with you. From almost 40 years of clinical experience, I'm very good at doing that, but what I most enjoy is helping successful people be even more successful and healthier. Just as athletes use coaches to achieve their full potential, coaching by phone can help you achieve your full potential. If you have goals that you're having difficulty achieving or are interested in life makeover coaching to help you develop a comprehensive plan for your life, give me a call and I'll see if I can get you on my coaching schedule. The phone number is on all my websites, and further information about my coaching is at drbricky.com. That's drbricky.com. Also on drbricky.com, you can read about the coaching I did with three women that was featured in six issues of Let's Live magazine. And now back to Doug and Deborah. So let's get back to the solutions, but first I have one more question. I noticed you endorsed Dr. Barry Sears' diet, who we had on the program a few weeks ago. Do you know him? Did you stumble on it, or how did you come up with that as your choice for diet?
The diet aspect is a major part of the whole body equation. Coming from my roots in the health and fitness industry and my 20-plus years as a competitive bodybuilder, I've had to manipulate my weight through diet with everywhere from getting down to 4% body fat for competition all the way up to 275 pounds of body weight for powerlifting competition, and maintaining my muscle mass at just under 200 pounds, which I still carry today. And so diet has been an integral part of that, so I've always been constantly reading and learning. But Dr. Sears has got the best formulation for the average person, because people need structure with diet. And what Dr. Sears has done with his research on inflammation, the importance of fish oils, just his methodology for structuring the diet and positioning the proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, it's probably the best diet that anybody could follow. It's a little bit lacking for people that are highly athletic, that have a big nutritional demand as far as for protein, for building muscle, people that are much more active, more like Debbie and I are. But for the average person, Dr. Sears' diets and his books on the zone and inflammation are absolutely top shelf. We highly recommend them.
So that's part of the solution, is a good diet. You say the key to physical fitness starts with good posture, and that starts with the hips.
Well, it starts with the spine, basically, but the hips are our connection to the ground. That's how we're anchored to the ground. But our spine position itself is really the key part, and that's where people don't understand that. And things like we were talking about earlier with yoga and other activities, gymnastics, that are extremely abusive to spine position, allows for these extreme, inordinate ranges of motion that people do. If they maintain their spine position, there's an automatic limitation. And the reason that is there is because if you think about what's inside your vertebral column, it's half of your central nervous system, your spinal cord. And in my estimation, and the way Debbie and I think, that to me is one of the most important things that we should be maintaining at all costs. Is that is the last thing that you should let go. And unfortunately, for all of these activities that people do, that's the first thing they let go. And that spine position is critical to shoulder function, to hip function, to basically the proper function of all the joints in our body. And when we lose that spine position, we also lose the function of the rest of the body.
The first exercise you do, and you have a whole series of six exercises on it, is with the psoas muscle. And I learned about that one personally a few months ago when suddenly I developed a limp. And I went to a chiropractor, and most of what he did was loosening up that psoas muscle. Is that the biggest problem, or at least the biggest starting point for most people's posture problems?
Well, it's a big part of it, because it attaches to your spine. Now, when he worked on you, did he work on your psoas across the hip joint? Did he stretch out your hips?
I believe so. It was, and a lot of what he did was loosening that psoas muscle specifically.
Yeah, right at the hip joint, because right. That's what will keep your hip in a flexed position and be responsible for the limp. The thing that we found, because of its enormous attachment at the spine, it literally attaches to your entire lumbar spine all the way up to the 12th thoracic vertebrae, and the pull on your spine, so if you can envision that pull between the top of your thigh bone and your lumbar spine, that pulling, your shortening, is either your spine has to bend into a huge curve in your back, or else your hip is going to flex. You had the sore hip or the limp, which was that muscle was unable to stretch out,
mm-hmm.
So you end up getting a limp out of it, but the pull on your spine is there too. The first stretch that we have in our DVD addresses the spine portion of the psoas muscle and how to stretch it, and we found that that's the very first stretch on the DVD where we actually use a ball, a number 3 soccer ball, to position yourself on and actually stretch out and lengthen, which is the biggest part of the muscle. We're talking probably 8 or 9 inches worth of muscle that in that underneath your abdominal cavity and underneath all of your insides that stays tight. And this is what people, they can stretch your hip joint all you want, but unless you get at that lumbar spine portion and lengthen the muscle up there, it's not going to be a complete fix.
Is that a difficult muscle to get to?
Absolutely, because all of your insides are over the top of your intestines and everything else. So fortunately, there's no nerve innervation for your internal organs and stuff, so you're not going to feel anything when you lie in the ball. But the tightness that you feel when you lie in the ball, and just watch the DVD, that'll show you. It's a very uncomfortable stretch, but the tightening that occurs on there is huge.
The tightening, Doug tightened his so much when he was young, at the age of 18. That's what actually fractured his spine, was his psoas muscle.
Mm.
That's right. Working in a foundry and pushing molds onto a conveyor belt with my right hip and my belly, and by doing that, now if you're sitting down and you push your belly out and just push it out as hard as you can. Mm-hmm. Your psoas is actually behind that, pushing your abdomen out. So when your psoas is functioning, pushing your abdomen out, your abdominals are loose in an extended position, a lengthened position, and they can't function. So if you go to the doctor for your back, and he says, well, geez, you've got weak abdominals, your abdominals can't even function because of the push of the psoas. So that was my beginning understanding when I hurt my back, is that I would draw my abdomen in, belly button to the spine, if you would, and that took pressure off my back. So if you're pushing your belly out right now, pull your belly button to your spine, and you'll feel an enormous change in your lumbar spine. And now you're controlling your psoas muscle. You've got four layers of abdominal muscle, and that's those guys are actually working now to work and control your psoas. So you've got a choice. You're either going to push your belly out or you're going to hold it in.
So is the psoas muscle an unusually hard muscle to get at through most exercises? I know your exercise for it is a rather unusual one.
It's not difficult, and if you understand what the function, you have to use your abdominals to maintain your neutral spine. And that's the part that people don't understand, is they end up pushing their abdomen out when they're doing all of their exercises. Literally, that's the precursor for everybody's back pain.
It's very difficult to get to, in that you have to, it goes along the whole spine, and then it also goes down and it goes across your hip joint. So in order to stretch the muscle as it needs to be, you have one end has to hold while you're stretching the other end. People have no idea how to hold their abdominals in and try and stretch that psoas across their hip, or stretch it across their hip and hold their hip and try and stretch it across their spine. It's very, very difficult because of its length, and it's very, very strong. Its main function is to flex your hip. So it's there to bend your hip up. So of course, it's a very strong, strong muscle. And so that's why we have it, so that you're lying on the ball. So that's stretching it at your spine. And then the position that we have the legs, it's stretching across the hip joint at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We came up with this because of our own backs. So this stretch we have never, ever seen anywhere before.
And this is also one of the principles that you teach, that one of the biggest problems is that muscles don't get stretched or relaxed all the way. I mean, people normally think, oh, I need to tighten the muscle, and, you know, as we would with our biceps, but usually the problem is the other direction.
Well, it's the opposing muscle that's lax, because your body's a living, breathing pulley system. So your example of the biceps, in order to get the biceps to lengthen, we need to have the appropriate amount of tension and strengthen the triceps to extend the elbow, which in turn lengthens the bicep. Muscles only shorten. That's a huge understanding that people need to have, is that muscles do not lengthen. They have no capacity whatsoever to lengthen. That if we took your bicep out and laid it on the table, it would just like a rubber band. That's a great analogy for a muscle. As you pull a rubber band apart, let it go, it's always going to, both ends move to the middle. And a muscle is indiscriminate in its pull. So as you were talking about the psoas before, when you're stretching that muscle, if you pull on one end, the other end wants to shorten too. So you literally have to stretch and hold both ends, and it's that concept of holding both ends of the muscle to stretch properly that is totally lost in activities that are supposed to be flexibility-oriented, like yoga and so on, and the stretching things that people attempt to do to themselves. So they're basically letting go of one side, and that muscle then in turn is transferring the pull-up to the other end of the muscle, which for the psoas is the lumbar spine.
And one of the unique things that comes from your exercises is making sure that both ends are held so that you get a maximum stretch of that muscle.
Exactly. But what that does is it limits the range of motion. And that is hugely informative to people, because they'll be doing this. I mean, we do a calf stretch. The second stretch on the DVD is a seated calf hamstring stretch. And when we position people in that stretch and put their foot in the proper position for that, and then we have them put their spine in position, they about hit the ceiling. They go, oh, my gosh.
That's all the further they have to move.
They don't do anything. Their leg is literally at about a 45-degree angle to their torso, and they get their rib cage up close to getting into position, and they just hit the ceiling. They're just like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this. And yet you see people sitting down, and they'll sit down on the table, and they'll put their leg up, and then they'll bend forward and put their head down on their knee. Their backs are on it, everything else, and they're just saying, whoa, look how flexible I am. That isn't flexibility. That's called letting go, and you do not want to let go, because what you're letting go is of the very things that are going to hold you together, the ligaments of your spine. Why would you want to let those go?
Do I understand right that probably 90% of Americans have poor hip position and that psoas muscle too tight, and then that messes up all the rest of their posture?
So that's a pretty good assumption. In fact, it's probably even higher than that, because most people lose their proper function of their hips, if they've ever even had it to start with, by the time they're in their out of their teens. The tightness that's across it, your body's going to figure out a way to stand up. That's part of our survival mechanism, is that your body will compensate and figure out a way to stay standing on 2 feet. So all you need to do is look outside and watch people walk around, and you're going to see everybody ambulating differently and looking differently as they walk. That's their body compensating for lack of hip function. So we'll figure out a way to balance ourselves and so on, but just because we're standing on 2 feet is no indication that we are, in fact, using our hips. When people are diagnosed with osteoporosis, the place that they find osteoporosis first is in the lumbar spine and the hip joint.
And that's where we're supposed to be bearing all of our weight is supposed to be borne through our hip joint. So that is the last place that you should have osteoporosis.
That's right, and they, you know, and it's just, and people do that. So if anything that anybody was doing as far as function and weight bearing and so on had any validity, there wouldn't be any osteoporosis, but yet the opposite is true. So we do not bear weight through our hips, but that is the precursor to the fact that 80% of plus of the population will succumb to back pain, because without proper hip function, that's what saved me. My spine is fractured, and without my hips maintaining and me maintaining them as strong as I keep them, I would have no chance with my back. So it's my hips that have literally saved my life. But the hip joint, there's no reason why people should be getting hip replacements. Hip replacements come from dysfunction. Same thing with knee replacements. Your hips are made to last your entire life. They don't wear out from use. They wear out from abuse. And the tightening that occurs with the psoas just tightens them down. So the whole mechanics of the joint is changed. And that becomes abusive and eventually degrades the joint to the point that you have to have a replacement.
So when people come to you, you usually start with their hips and lower spine. What's usually the next biggest problem you see?
Thoracic spine. The kyphosis, or the rounded upper back position, is the is probably the next biggest area, and that is a direct result of the condition of the lumbar spine and the pelvis and the hips. The more curve that the lower back has requires that the upper back, the thoracic spine, has a greater curve too. The problem lies in the fact that the lumbar spine can flex and extend as your cervical spine can. Your thoracic spine is one-dimensional in that it can only flex. So ideally, you want to have the least degree of flexion in your thoracic spine. But as people get older, they get that more of that rounded back, kyphotic back position, and people look at that and they call that aging, and what that is just horrendous posture. Here's a little point in fact, though, is that the push of the belly, what we were talking about earlier, of pushing the belly out, that actually creates a downward pull on the rib cage and lends itself to more of that bowed upper back position. So everybody that you see walking around with a protruding abdomen, guaranteed their upper back is in a rounded back, excessively curved thoracic spine position. That cuts their heart space in half, cuts their breathing space in half. They can't breathe properly. Their diaphragm is laying down in their abdomen. The sternum is laying on top of the heart, so their heart can't function properly. And now we wonder why we have problems with the cardiovascular system and why the heart can't work, when structurally everything is in the wrong place.
The Marines used to say, suck that stomach in, soldier. Is that literally going to help people, or is it far more complicated than that?
Well, that's part of it. That drawing in of the abdomen engages the transverse abdominis, which is the very underlying laying of the abdomen. But the second step to this equation is drawing in the abdomen and then lifting the rib cage, the bottom of the rib cage, away from the pelvis, which means the thoracic spine, engaging that thoracic spine and using your extensor muscles of your back and pulling them back up. Now, the extensor muscles of the back don't work for most people because the lumbar spine has so much curve in it that the muscles basically are shut down. Your spinal muscles, your extensors of the back, and your abdominal muscles are postural muscles in that they work at half tension. So we need that half tension position, that neutral spine position, for those muscles to hold. If we put too much curve in our lumbar spine, the muscles shut down. If we put too much curve in our neck, in other words, if we tip our head back and look up at the ceiling when we try to squat or we try to get up out of a chair, you shut down the extensor muscles of your back, which leaves your spine completely without support. And that's why people cannot access that middle part of their back, is because the muscles don't function, because the lower back's got them shut down. The lower back position or the neck position or both. The lumbar spine and the cervical spine mirror each other.
Let's take a look at a couple of common health problems that come from poor positioning and posture and movement. We have so many people getting knee replacements these days. What's going wrong there?
Lack of hip function and the compensation that the body has to go through. People insisting on wearing flip-flops and Crocs and other non-supportive footwear, the compensation that the feet have to go through. Your foot is compensatory. That's where we strike the ground. So your foot is made to operate on uneven surfaces and be able to engage those. But when your hip and your foot are supposed to be doing the same thing or working in the same plane, your knee is a single-plane joint in the middle. So your hip is doing one thing, usually an internal rotation component, and then your foot's turning itself out, and your knee's in the middle just getting twisted and torqued and everything, and it finally breaks. So it's a dysfunction of the hip and the foot that makes the knee give in. It has nothing to do with aging or arthritis or anything. Arthritis is nothing more than the body's response to the abuse that the joint's been under.
I was surprised that you don't like people going barefoot and you don't like tennis shoes.
Very non-supportive. Most tennis shoes only last for, you know, and people look for comfort in their feet. Oh, well, geez, these are comfortable. That's a display of the tightness that they have in their feet. That's why they're looking for these things that are comfortable and soft and squishy and all this other stuff. Is your shoes are supposed to give your foot some support and maintain your arches. I mean, I've heard people, and we've had patients come in and clients that come in and say, oh, well, geez, I was born with flat feet. Very few people are ever born with flat feet. Your feet are crushed. Your arches are crushed by the lack of hip function that you have on the other end, and eventually they just cave in. So you need to have some type of supportive footwear.
Are the Crocs that are so popular good or bad?
Absolutely horrible. And you want to know the irony of it? Walk into any hospital and see how many doctors and nurses are walking around in those crazy things.
Oh, yes.
They just allow the foot to do whatever it feels like doing, so they're comfortable. The problem is that it's really not comfort, because when they get home, I am telling you, their feet hurt. They probably hurt before they get home because they're crushing their feet.
Hmm. And you say a lot of arthritis is caused by poor posture and poor movement.
Well, the arthritic condition in and of itself, the swelling, the pain, all of the things that happen with arthritis is the body's response to the abuse that the joint is under. It's self-inflicted. You know, unless you have rheumatoid arthritis or something that is a breakdown of the immune system, the rest of the arthritis that everybody encounters as they age is nothing more than the body's response to the abuse that they're under.
Well, because, again, back to the pulley system, we have a quad that straightens our knee out, and we have a hamstring that bends it. Now, if you're sitting, your hamstring is constantly tightening behind your knee, and your quad at your knee is actually being overstretched. And unless there's a bounce there, then what happens is that knee is going to stay bent. Even when you stand up, you never really straighten that knee out. Over time, that gets tighter and tighter. This pulley system that you haven't readjusted and fixed is just keeps abusing that joint. The joint's there. The muscle pulls on the joint to allow the joint to move. But if you have one side that's too tight, other side's overstretched, now there's an imbalance at that joint. Over time, and hence it occurs when you're in your 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, you end up with this arthritic condition. And it doesn't have to be.
This is such a profoundly different way of viewing fitness. I'm absolutely fascinated, and I think it's going to take me months, if not years, to digest, but I am just very, very impressed. We're talking with trainer Doug Splitgerber and physical therapist Deborah Corbo, authors of Your Body, Your Responsibility. This is just such a refreshing look at posture and muscles and fitness. The book comes with a DVD that shows you how to do the exercises that they're talking about. The website is yourbodyyourresponsibility.com, or you can go to yourbodyradio.com, where you can get an MP3 of how to do that squat exercise that they talked about. Their training center, by the way, is in Naples, Florida. And again, I'll let you guys talk about the radio program details.
We've got a shorter URL for our website. It's Your Body Online, so that'll save you the typing in your responsibility. So just go to yourbodyonline.com. From this site, you can access our radio program that's on weekly on Tuesday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time and Saturdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on KFNX Radio on Saturdays and HealthyLife.net on Tuesdays. So you can access both of those. So it's just that things that we're doing, and the beauty of all this stuff, Dr. Bricky, is that it applies to every single one of us as human beings. This is the template of human function that we all live with. It is not fact or fancy. It is or fiction or fancy. It is mechanically and anatomically correct. It is irrefutable in its function. It applies to every one of us, and this is what people need to hang their hats on, because applied to everybody, this works on 100% of the people that we use this on, because that's how our body functions. I wish we could take credit for this, but we are only the lowly messengers, so we are really happy to bring this to people's attention. It has basically saved our own backs and our own lives, and it's something that we highly recommend for everyone. Every person on the planet should have this information in their hands to live a better life in their body.
Well, I thank you for sharing it with us.
You're very welcome.
Commentary. What can we say about Deborah Corbo's and Doug Splitgerber's alignment resistment training method of stretching and strengthening? Well, first a disclaimer. My expertise is in the psychology of aging, and while I seek the best information and practices in fitness, I'm not a fitness expert, and there is a lot of contradictory advice when it comes to fitness. About 20 years ago, I had problems with herniated discs, and I know what back pain is. Fortunately, I sought out movement experts until I found one that taught me exercises to improve my posture and back problems, and I haven't had any serious back problems since. One of the reasons I chose Doug and Deborah for the program is that I'm a big believer in the importance of posture. While I have seen elements of their program in what other movement experts teach, theirs is by far the most aggressive and the most unique program I've found. Let me review a few of the highlights. They challenge several commonly held beliefs, including the idea that the heart needs exercise. Rather, they suggested the heart gets exercised 24/7, and what it needs most is help in better posture, better breathing, and better nutrition. They really dislike treadmills, both because of the repetitive motion that we get with treadmills and so many other sports and exercise equipment, and because it doesn't require your foot to push off, creating additional hip problems. They suggested that activities like gymnastics and yoga often emphasize stretching beyond the body is intended to do, and that is extremely harmful for the body. They talked about the key to weight loss isn't cardio exercise, because that often ends up metabolizing muscles that aren't being used in order to provide some of the energy that the cardio exercise is burning. Rather, they see the key to weight loss is building muscle because of its higher metabolism. They said the idea that lifting weights will make a woman muscular is pure nonsense, unless, of course, she's taking steroids. And they really don't like the idea of tennis shoes, Crocs, thongs, or going barefoot. They want you to wear a pair of leather shoes with good support to your arches. Their training emphasizes fully relaxing a muscle, and that the biggest posture problems start with that chronically flexed psoas muscle that so many of us have constantly contracted. The psoas muscle is the large muscle that connects the femur or leg bone to the hip and to the lumbar discs. They explained how most of those knee replacement surgeries are needed because of poor hip alignment, poor posture, and or what we do with our feet. And that arthritis, with the exception of rheumatoid arthritis, is usually caused by misuse of our bodies. Competitive weightlifters are some of the most disciplined eaters that you'll ever see. That's because they manipulate food and supplements very carefully to optimize muscle mass. It's a very competitive sport. Consequently, they learn a lot about nutrition. Doug and Deborah recommended Barry Sears' Zone Diet as ideal for most people, and the Zone Diet with a little more protein for extremely athletic people. And finally, I note that Doug and Deborah both have a track record of success with clients and a track record of overcoming their own disc problems and personally excelling at fitness for decades. Ultimately, the proof is in the results. I've started using their system, and I'll report back in a later show. One of the easiest ways for you to check it out and get a little further feel for the lessons that they teach are to log on to yourbodyradio.com, where you can access that free MP3 that demonstrates how they do that straight back squat exercise. And while you wouldn't normally think of it, a squat exercise is one that burns a lot of calories because it's using some of the biggest muscles in the body, namely your leg muscles. Emails. Love getting those emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. The most common response I got to our show last week with financial planner Michael Eichen was curiosity about the retirement annuities that use mutual funds that guarantee to never fall lower than the purchase price or the amount of the mutual fund's price on any of the anniversary dates of purchase, whichever is higher. Of course, the most common response I received was, "Why didn't you do the show a year ago so I could have gotten that before the market crashed?" Sorry about that. I'd love to hear comments and feedback on the show with Deborah Carbo and Doug Splitgerber. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. This is America's anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, with Ageless Lifestyles Radio on webtalkradio.net, your source for cutting-edge thinking on being youthful at every age. Thank you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier, and see you next week.